Welcome to the Gerald Journal podcast. My name is Holly Hensley. I'm the librarian at Gerald High School, and I facilitate this podcast. But the real stars are hosts Christine Collins and Stephen York, and our producer, Kessler Mixon. All three are smart and outgoing students here at Gerald High School, and they are very excited to bring this podcast to you. We have big plans to interview interesting characters and paint a colorful picture of life here in Gerald, Texas. Gerald's a small town located about an hour north of Austin, and we hope you tune in to the Gerald Journal podcast to hear what's happening in this up-and-coming community.
All right, so welcome. My name is Stephen York, and with me is my lovely co-host, Christine.
Yes.
And today we have the very respectable Sheriff Roger Chody.
Robert Chody, yes.
Robert Chody, all yes. Right, I just want to make sure. I got that right.
You did, Robert Chody.
Very nice. So how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. I appreciate you all inviting me. I hear this is your very first podcast.
Yes, very exciting.
I am honored to be at the Gerald High School and do this with you, so thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, we'll just start by asking some basic questions. What was, where did you grow up, if you don't mind me asking?
I grew up actually in Florida, Miami, Florida area, and kind of migrated up towards the north at a young age when my father passed away due to his own hand. But we moved up north to the Tennessee, Kentucky area, and that's kind of where I grew up, and back to central Florida and back and forth. So I don't really have a place I claim as home, right. Technically, but that was kind of my upbringing.
Yeah. Traveled a lot as
I did, I did.
I can relate to that.
So because of that, could you tell us how you were as a teenager, like as a kid?
You know, I don't know what teenagers are like in the aspects of now when we talk about skateboarding. I was really big into skateboarding, and that's when, remember, mm-hmm. Tony Hawk, you all still follow Tony Hawk, or at least some of you know Tony Hawk.
Right.
And Tony Hawk is my age, and he was kind of the founder of skateboarding, you know, the half pikes. And so I was more of a street skater, or I was trying to be. Mm-hmm. I was decent, but I wasn't great, nowhere near Tony Hawk by any means, but I just enjoyed hanging out with, you know, fellow skaters. I tried surfing. Remember, I'm from Florida, too, okay?
Right.
So it was kind of normal. But then when I moved, I didn't really do much of anything. I was really just concentrating on school and concentrating my efforts on being in law enforcement, because I knew at a young age I wanted to be in law enforcement.
Yeah. Well, was it like someone in your family or something that pushed you, or was it just...
No, it was actually a negative situation that occurred. I grew up in an environment, you remember I said my father passed away.
Yes.
At a young age, and when my mother was starting to date again, she met a biker. He was 6 foot something, you know, and I'm not talking like somebody just owned a Harley. This was a real biker, belonged to a club. And he was abusive towards my mother. And there was alcohol and drugs were introduced into my family at my young age. It was around 12 to 14 is this time frame. And then the abuse started coming towards the children, me being the oldest of four children. But it wasn't me, it was abused. My twin brother got hit one night when we saw my mother getting beat up pretty bad. And it was probably the worst beating I saw my mother take as a kid. And because of me running out, I was scared to death. I ran out of we lived in a trailer in Florida, mm-hmm. and called 911, and it was because of a county police officer that responded. And remember, laws back then, when we talk about family violence, were different. It was more about mediation. You know, you go over here, you go over there. Now they're better protection. I mean, we still can do more, but they're better to protect the victims of family violence. And in this case, the officer, the deputy, did an extraordinary job and took this man to jail, and we never saw him again. And that night I felt a sense of security like I've never felt, never. And it just felt so good. I said, I want to do that job. I want to do what he did for one child. And that's kind of what motivates me. It's been my motivation ever since, and that's what we've been doing.
Nice.
Having that motivation does like certainly keep you going as an officer when things are like bad or going up and down.
Absolutely,
so just, like,
absolutely.
Knowing your prime reason for what you're doing.
And plus you can relate to, you know, a lot of people. I mean, there are kids in this school who I don't even know who can relate to that story. Because they've done, and it doesn't matter how much money you have or how much money you don't have. Everybody can relate to some part of that story, or in most cases.
Most cases. Yeah, very true. I always feel like the majority of people feel like they can't really like relate to police officers, firefighters, and stuff, but deep down, if you take some time and just talk to people...
Valid point. Yeah. Very good point, and that's true. Police officers are part of their community. You know, they live in your neighborhoods, and they grew up like your parents did, so it's kind of the same concept. They just have a different job that isn't very... especially nowadays, it's not really looked on as a profession as we would like to claim. We think it is, so.
Very much so. Well, anyway, so now that we kind of got kind of a little bit of background, if you don't mind me asking, what's like the daily life or the kind of like daily routine you go through starting your day before you go to work?
So, I mean, I think typical, just like anybody else, you know, I read my Bible in the mornings. Sometimes I neglect that. I try to get updates on what occurred over the night. You know, last night I got a call in the middle of the night of a pretty something that we don't necessarily publicize, but I try to figure out what's happened from the night before and get updates on the calls for service that we took last night and try to get a starting point in addition to what's already currently on my schedule.
Right.
And then we start, you know, laying out a plan for that day. And then, you know, we have a jail at the sheriff's office as well as the law enforcement side. So it's not necessarily a typical day every day because it's different every day.
Right.
I wish I could say it was typical because it would be a lot easier on me, I think. But I actually like that, too. I do pretty well in that environment. So.
What are the hours like?
You know, they vary so much, and, you know, like I said last night, I got a call. I just dozed off, and I hadn't been sleeping the past 2 days, so it was nice, you know, that deep sleep that you get in. You're like, hey, nothing can get me out of sleep except a phone call.
Oh, okay.
And then they were asking for some questions. We were actually considering using the SWAT team, and when you have to make decisions deep in the sleep like that, you know, you're trying to wake yourself up, and then you can't go back to sleep when you hang up the phone. So, it's not always like that, but there are nights that are like that. So, but typically it's quiet nights around here.
That's good,
I have to say, nights without sleep, that seems like my daily routine. Although, so naturally, most of the time there isn't like the scenes you see on TV where it's like the big like drug bust or stuff like that. But here in Wilco, has there ever been kind of like the like what's your like your biggest
most common thing that you would do on a day-to-day job?
On a day-to-day job, I think, and it depends if it's day shift or night shift, if you're talking about patrols and things of that nature, I think our most common calls during the days are the typical collisions, you know, during rush hours, specifically to burglary report calls or burglary vehicle calls, theft calls types. That's, you know, when we talk about property crimes, those are probably the biggest things we deal with on day shift. Not always, but typically. Night shift is the typical family violence, the unique family violence ones where they're not just so cut and dry, where the deputies really have to work and supervisors have to get in and start planning on, hey, this is the way we should be doing it. This is how we have to apply the law. It's not just a simple, what I was used to on patrol, it seemed like it was always, hey, if they meet these elements, they go to jail. If they don't, they don't. And it's still true to that case, but it just doesn't seem, there's always seems to be one method of that part of the law that was left out for some reason, and they're trying to see if they have an arrestable offense. But so you see more, I think, arrest during nighttime, more the calls for service that are aiding our community when we talk about collisions or things of that nature during the daytime.
Okay, yeah. So another question I was having is kind of going back to the TV shows where I show the big. Have you ever had like one of those kind of like, for lack of better words, like big incidents like that they show on TV, on like the TV shows or anything like that?
You talking about like on Live PD?
Yes.
Because you say we are on Live PD. And you didn't know that?
No, I
that's
watch,
okay if you didn't know that.
I watch Lone Star Law because my father's a game warden, so a little bit biased there.
Oh, okay, you are, but that's okay. You can be biased. So we are on Live PD, which is, are you familiar with Live PD?
A little bit.
Are you familiar with Live PD?
Of course.
Okay,
of
so, course. Well, good for you. So for those that aren't familiar, because you're not the only one that's not familiar with it, but it's equivalent to Cops, except it's live. And it's got a much bigger following than Cops does. We are one of eight agencies in the country that are featured on Live PD. Then we're on every Fridays and Saturday nights from 8 p.m. to 11, and it's live. And they were riding with two of the deputies that they've chosen or that I've chosen or both. And they, in some aspects, these deputies become celebrities nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of crazy because we weren't expecting that. But I guess we expected some of that. But it's really a unique experience for, I mean, and if you watch it, you'll see Lieutenant Kennedy is one of the popular ones. Detective LaRere is another popular, we'll call him personality, I guess. But it's done a great deal for us in the aspects from the Sheriff's Department perspective, transparency, because it's live. You know, that's something I wanted the community to see, and plus me. I don't see everything as sheriff because I'm at home or something. But now I can see the policies that they're implementing and see where we need to change things or readdress issues, and it's helped us a great deal. Some of it's nerve-wracking, though, because you don't know.
Sure.
But I think transparency is important for a community and for a law enforcement agency.
And can you tell us how Wilco got involved with the Live PD program?
Yeah, so if you have Twitter, I don't know if you do. If you do have Twitter, you should be following me at Sheriff Chody, okay? I have a pretty good following, and that's partly because of Live PD. But prior to Live PD, I'm very... I have a good sense of humor, like
right.
you said. I mean, very good sense. You probably have already sensed that, right?
Yeah.
But, and I take life serious, but I've had some things in my life where I just, hey, let's throw a joke in there, or mm-hmm. let's do something. Let's look at mm-hmm. the light side. Let's look at the glass half full, not half empty.
Right.
And so I put out something when Live PD came out in season one. They're currently in season three, where they just finished season three. And when they first came out, I didn't know if we would even be a part of it. Didn't even have a thought of it. It would have been nice to have been a part of it. And then I put out a tweet one day mm-hmm. and said, hey, we would like to be a part of it. Nothing came of it. Then I saw almost like a cult-like following on social media, Twitter. Because if you go on Friday nights and Saturday nights on Twitter, we are interactive with it. They call it hashtag LivePDNation. They uh-huh. are, I mean, it's amazing. They can get a word trending. And I don't know if you've been watching it lately, but we have silly words that they trend that we can get Dan Abrams, the host, who's a national news correspondent right. from ABC News. He's the one who hosts the show. We can get him to say that word because he says, hey, what's the word today that we're going to trend? And we get Live PD Nation together, and we think of a word, and we put it out there, and boom, it's trending number one on Twitter. And so that's how powerful this this audience is. But it's been a great, and the reason I got on it was I put out a tweet basically saying, hey, Live PD, if you think we're going to beg you to be on your show, well, you're right, we will. Please, 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 please. And that was kind of, I think, is what I believe helped us get into the door, because the day after I did get a phone call from the producers of Live PD, and they came down and checked us out. The good news is Williams County is a safe community.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Good news if you live here.
Live here.
Kind of could be somewhat negative if you're trying to get on TV, and that's what they want to kind of highlight. Mm-hmm. The good thing is Live PD just does not want to just highlight right. the negatives. They will make a story out of things that, you know, the officer, you know, stepping in something on the way to the, you know, call, you know, and they make a little, it's because it's funny, that's
right.
true, it's real. And so it's fun, that's the fun aspect of it. But it's been a great opportunity for us, and we've loved it, and they've been with us 12 weeks. They're taking a break this Friday and Saturday, and next Friday and Saturday. We won't be on live. And then after that, we return.
Okay.
Oh, good to hear.
So you guys are going to set up like a new season.
Yeah, and I say season. I don't know if it's the new season. I think it's just a break. And
okay.
I'd have to check. I don't know if it's considered
it's
a new season.
Like,
I did say that, though.
The production break in between.
That's
like,
exactly what it is, because they've been on for so long. You know, New York needs to have some time
mm-hmm.
off.
Okay.
So Dan Abrams needs his, you know, 2 weeks, which I get because he's busy. But
mm-hmm.
It's a great opportunity for us.
All
and
right.
with, like, all the cameras always being surrounded by you guys and everything is live, how do you think technology has affected the way you operate?
I think it's been great. I say great, and there's some negatives too, because one thing that is difficult is when we use social media, specifically technology, to put out information. We use Nextdoor, Facebook, Instagram, to put out information, looking for lost children, elderly people who have dementia, some aspect to help us find this person. And it's helped us tremendously in places like that. So that has been a plus. The negative is in social media or technology is when you see something on the street and you're not privy to law enforcement information and you put your two cents in because mm-hmm. it makes sense to you. You're not trying to be deceptive, but by the time that story carries on, it's just not accurate at all.
Right.
And then before you know it, we're trying to defend something. And I'm telling you, social media, the first person to come out with the story
right.
is the one who's going to carry the message, and they don't even have to be right. And that's why we use it as well. I want to be the first one to get our message when we're doing something at the sheriff's office.
Right.
And I think we do a pretty good job of doing that.
All right. So kind of going along this social media route and off of what you said before, is unfortunately, some people find that your line of work isn't really a profession, sort of say, anymore. And I was wondering if, like, kind of that built-in kind of, like, stigma that's kind of been on the rise recently, unfortunately, if that's kind of changed a little bit of how y'all operate throughout the years.
Absolutely. I think when you see law enforcement executives around the country, they're using social media like Twitter for a reason. Mm-hmm. They're trying to reach out. There's a reason I'm here at Juro ISD, you know, talking with the students, because we understand the importance of connecting to
right.
the community. And that's one thing Live PD has helped us do, too, because if you watch Live PD and you're a fan of Live PD, you see a deputy that you like. Well, now you have a deputy in your own community, and that gives you something to relate to. And plus, you get to see that deputy on a regular basis where you almost feel like, hey, I kind of know that deputy.
Right.
And now all of a sudden we've got a community relationship and we don't even know who that person is. So that's the positive aspect of that. And I think it helps us. And I think all law enforcement in most cases have realized the importance of that.
Yeah, that is incredible. I've always been a fan of the police, again, probably because my father's a game warden, but
have you ever
really
seen any instances where somebody would come up to you to talk to you because they've seen you on the show?
Oh, absolutely, and not just me. So I, as a sheriff, I will go on occasionally, and they don't ride with me. I will back up a lieutenant or Lieutenant Kennedy or Detective Lurer or some of the other deputies that we have there, and I'm not on there every night. But I've had even cases of that, but we have seen where And Kennedy and LaRere have told me they've been out eating, not in their clothing, patrol clothing, and their civilian clothing with their family. And people have come up and said hello and asked for autographs. And they are beside themselves because they're not making movies. They're just doing their job. So it's kind of, I think, an awkward moment for them. But at the same time, I know they enjoy it, but it's just a transition they're not used to.
This next question is actually more for a friend of mine that he asked if I could put in. So young people looking to be joining the police force whenever they are able and get out of high school or perhaps a higher education, what exactly do y'all look for in new recruits nowadays?
So first of all, I'd always encourage people to, and education is important, a post-high school education is important. I think you should, if you have any desire at all to do a post-high school education, I think that is the opportunity to do it when you're young. As soon as you graduate, while it's still fresh in your memory. So I didn't do that. I wish I would have. And when I got my degree years later. Some people have a choice if they would like to go to the military. I think services are, I was in the military as well. It's an honorable service. Some people don't have the desire or the academics grades to do that, and they do a trade or something. And I am not good with my hands at all. I wish I was. So, I mean, that's admirable as well. But for anybody who has an interest, I think you should always have something to fall back on. That's why I say education, if you're looking at law enforcement.
Right.
And then, but at the age of 18, you can, at the sheriff's office, you can be employed as a correctional officer. And we can put you in training for a month and a half. And then a month and a half, you're walking in the pods of our jail. We have a daily population of roughly 600 inmates. And then, if you choose to stay in law enforcement and you stay at the corrections side for a few years until you're 21, we can even pay you to go to the law enforcement training academy and certify you to become a cop, where you're patrolling the streets of Wilco after that. So, and that's something that I did when I came into the sheriff's office. So you have a couple options. Now, if you want to wait till you're 21, then you can start applying at all these other agencies, you know, like Austin PD. I used to be an Austin police officer. And that's how I did it. I went straight to them. They hired me. They paid me as a civilian to learn how to be a cop, and that's what I did for 7 months. So there are many avenues and a lot of agencies and schools, and there's programs that ACC has got some things to help those people who have that desire. So it depends on each individual what they're trying to do on how to get that.
All right. So it's kind of like multi-branching.
There are many ways to do the same thing, yes.
All right.
And branching off from what you said you're in the military, and that is very honorable. And thank you for your service.
Thank you
very much, yes.
So what is the discipline comparison between discipline in the military and discipline as a police officer?
Well, I mean, you have a different mission, per se. So, I mean, you know, and maybe it's changed because it's been a while since I've been in, but you're serving a community as a police officer, where you're in a service to the government in reference to, you know, you think of international issues or international crimes, war crimes, and you're abroad, you're not near the, you know, home front, where here every decision I make affects me too. In other words, if I don't arrest that DWI driver, that could affect me and my wife and my family. That same driver could hit the car that I'm driving in or that my family's driving in. So it's more personalized in my view. And so I kind of approach it that way. This is the roads that we're enforcing or the crime that we're attacking or deploying resources at. If we have burglaries in a certain area, hey, how is that affecting my community where I live? You know, because my family's home at night sometimes by themselves. So, I mean, it's more personal.
Right.
More getting about connected with the community, and you can really feel the impact.
Absolutely.
Of what's going on.
And I think the live PD really like does a great job of that, because they get to see an insight of like who that person is as a person, like not just on the job.
Absolutely. And you know, it helps us in this aspect too, and I'll kind of call him out a little bit. Kennedy, for example, you know, he'd been riding for a while, and you know, I watched the show as well because I want to know what's going on. And he had a couple incidents where he didn't wear his seatbelt. And I got a couple letters, rightfully so, right?
Rightfully so.
And I talked to him, and he held his head down, and he knew it. And he said, hey, I don't know why I was doing that. I took it off well before. And then, so it was a corrective measure in a positive way that we wouldn't have figured out otherwise. So it's those positives, too.
Right. Well, since we're kind of getting on to the end here, so kind of wrapping up, if you had, like, any messages for, like, teenagers nowadays going on to the future, what would you say for them?
I would say don't believe everything you read, specifically on social media. Don't always go with the first story you hear. You know, have some facts. You know, facts are important before you come up with a conclusion. And especially when we talk about, and I'm going to be specific to police, because when you see a story, even a video on law enforcement, let's also remember sometimes law enforcement duties are not pleasant to see. In other words, you know, when we talk about discipline of children, you don't know what he wants to see, a video of you spanking your child. And I'm not talking abuse, I'm talking a spanking, okay?
Right.
But nobody wants to see a video of that. But if you were to see a video of that, well, how judgmental would you be? Would you, you know, did you have to see the actions of the child before you saw the discipline? I mean, we could be very critical, and maybe rightfully so. I don't know. Right. I'm just saying, look at the whole story before you come up to a conclusion, and understand that I'm never suggesting that we don't address problem police officers who are badge heavy or violating civil rights. I've never, right. That's not in this subject at all. What I'm talking about is police officers are doing their job. And if you ever want to fight a ticket or an issue, on the side of the road is not the place to do that. There's court systems that are developed. Always be compliant. Now, if you think you're getting a order that is a violation of your civil rights, there are methods in order to make that complaint that have a better impact on that officer. And we have a process, you know, internal affairs, that we do that, and we're fair. I've demonstrated discipline in my own organization. We've got a great group of people, but sometimes we have to do discipline. So to sum it up, my message would be to be fair, get the facts before you come to a conclusion.
And so this next one's kind of a little off the wall.
A little bonus question.
Bonus question, if you will, yes. So it has come to, I guess, our attention that your family recently has won the lottery, correct?
Well, not recently. It was in 2001. And at that time, and let me be clear, because it was my wife who won, okay?
Right.
I was working at the Austin Police Department in 2001, March of 2001, and she won. And at that time, it was the state largest lottery. That was before they had Powerball. That's how long ago it was.
Wow.
But it was $85 million. And, but that's not with taxes. Remember, they take taxes.
True.
But hey, $1 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
But yeah, she won. And remember, this was a dream of mine to be a police officer. So it really messed up things a little bit for me, because my desire was to be a cop. I've already been working for APD, I think, 5 or 6 years. And I was on mounted patrol. I rode horses downtown. And I was really enjoying my job. And so when she won, we had to think of what we were going to do. I did not want to leave. And then at some point, I think it was a couple years later, or not even a year, a couple years later, that I said it's time to move on, even though I didn't really want to.
Right.
I was at the training academy for Austin Police Department, and I left. And that's when I made that decision. I think it was only a few months later. I was like, I got to get back in, because I was going crazy. And I said, this is where I can impact my community that affects me. And that's where that decision started. And I started in a deputy constable, and I don't know if you're familiar with constable, but it's a little different. It's more civil, but they were the only ones that were hiring what they call reserves, where you can work for free. And that's, I just wanted something to kind of get that cop out of me a little bit, and you can see it didn't help. But yeah, it was a great experience. Had some negatives. You have people come out of the woodwork, and it was a lot of publicity at first, but it was a great experience now. And you know, religion was really centered after that, because it wasn't before. It really caused some issues with you know, alcohol and some things like that, and I struggled. I don't want to say struggled with, but it didn't help me at all. And it wasn't until religion, and then I said, okay, let's. And after that, things really started going the right direction.
Good,
and
good.
Me and my family just we adopted 2 children in that process, and things have been now sheriff. So, but that's been what 2001. We're at 2019.
19 now.
18 years.
18 roundabout. Yeah.
And that was just 18 years. It was March. It was this month. It was 18 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so,
nice. Yeah. Congratulations. Then.
Well, thank you.
To you and your family. And before you go, I do want to ask you one last question.
Please.
What out of the many years you've been doing this experience, what has been the best day on the job?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know that I've ever been asked. That is a very good question. What is the best day on the job? I do know what it is. There was a young man by the name of Clayton Dalton. He was a Round Rock High School student. Did you know him?
No.
Oh, okay. He was 17 years old, and I met him during my campaign. He liked our patch, because I changed the patch colors to show a difference in our brand. And when he contacted me, he wanted the patch. I said, I'm not giving this kid a patch. I just got it. I'm not even in office yet. It was a few days before. Long story short, he got cancer right after I sent him the patch. He said, thank you. Then a couple months later, once I got into office, I heard he got cancer. And he reached out to me, or a family member reached out to me, and said he was at Dale's Children. Even though he was 17, he still fell under the pediatric numbers of, you know, child type thing. So I went to visit him and tried to lift his spirits up, and brought some swag, shirt, hat, you know, just trying to make him feel special. But because of that meeting, a relationship was created with me and him. And then all of a sudden, me, him, and his mother and his stepfather had a relationship. And then my family, my wife and kids had a relationship. And then all of a sudden, we're just together. And we still speak to this day. But it was a short battle. It was 9 months, I think. And then he lost his life. But that was the best, because I got to meet a young man like that who, and I get a little emotional when I think about it, but I would have never met that kid. And he was just a good kid. He wanted to join the service. He wanted to be a cop. He was trying to be an explorer, because we do offer that. Right. And we miss him a great deal. He became part of our sheriff's office. We all honored him, made him an honorary deputy. And it was just that was the best day of my career, I think, as far as law enforcement.
Because without law enforcement, you would have never met him.
Never would have.
That's right. Without a stupid patch request, you know.
Small things in life.
It really is. It really is. I had the had the honor to do his what do you call it?
Eulogy.
Eulogy. Thank you. His eulogy at the funeral. So it was very moving for me. It was very emotional. He had a great turnout, almost police-like honors because of who he was. He got patches and stuff from around the country. His video, we did a video for him. It went viral. Went to Chicago, ABC Chicago picked it up, and it just went over. I think we almost had 1 million views on it.
Wow.
Just doing a SWAT team at the Dell Children's Hospital. It was a great opportunity. We had a great time with it, and always considered blessed to have that opportunity with him. So.
So
thank you for that question. That's a good question.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That was wonderful. And I just want to say thank you for coming out to Gerald and talking with us. I know the viewers listening will take a moment to appreciate and have a deeper understanding of what you go through as law enforcement.
Well, so, thank you, and thank you for having me on your guest. And I would love to invite you all the opportunity. If you ever want to come down and take a tour, I'd love to show you, okay?
Yeah, more than happy to.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
No problem.